All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast, where I am joined, as always, by my co-host and best buddy, Mr. Aaron Pietzmein Malone. What's up, Aaron?
Hi, Bryce. How you doing today, man?
You know, things are all right. I mean, things are volatile. Things are uncertain. The markets have been shaky. But the one thing that isn't shaky is my conviction in the market, and that crypto will be a huge part of the future. And that we are, you know, surrounded by some of the most genius builders in the space. And we get to speak to one today. Isn't that right, Pietz?
That's right. We have Luigi Denario De Meo, the head of DeFi from Avalanche, with us today. And that makes perfect sense because I just got back from Colorado. Colorado Avalanche are one of the best hockey teams in the league right now. And there is such tremendous growth over there at the conference I was at that had many, many layer ones, including representation from Avalanche. But it's an ecosystem we really haven't talked a lot about. It's one of the newer ones, but the traction that they have underneath them is
staggering.
Absolutely tremendous. I mean, they've come a huge, huge way in a short amount of time. And I can't wait to learn more about what makes Avalanche special. So Luigi, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Really looking forward to chatting with you. Let's kick it off.
Let's kick it off. Yeah, before we even dive in, quick, you know, little background on yourself. Do you come at the crypto and the DeFi space more from, you know, a business standpoint, or maybe more of a developer standpoint, or, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my background is in traditional finance. So I worked at Citigroup for about 7 years trading on the institutional side. So I traded on a credit index desk, which is essentially a basket of credit default swaps, which is a derivative. I traded equities there and also held some other hats. Also, after that, kind of did some consulting work in terms of M&A, strategic advisory. Really got involved in crypto around 2015 in a big way. I mean, I'd sort of got involved with Bitcoin in like 2012, but really got involved with crypto and Ethereum around 2015 and 16. And, really started to hit all the conferences, all the meetups, dive into smart contracts, what was possible, and raised funding for my own dApp in 2017 that we sought out to build. So, you know, I kind of went down every rabbit hole, I think, that a builder goes down to building something in Web3. Understood all the complexity of building, using Solidity. And I'm not a developer myself, but, you know, from a project manager standpoint and kind of building a product, I really dove deep into kind of what it takes. Mm. And, you know, when DeFi came about, and I think, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is DeFi is probably the first real use case for crypto, first major real use case at scale. You know, I kind of dove in with both hands and full body, if you will. So, got involved really personal, on a personal basis, and, you know, given all the context I had, leverage and just being involved in the space, you know, I kind of just was bouncing around DeFi for a bit, and I had followed the Avalanche white paper since it dropped in 18. And, you know, when I saw the opportunity pop up and they were looking to expand that niche, I thought I could be a good fit. And, you know, that was almost a year ago now. And now here we are.
And let's just zoom out from a high level. Crypto 101, we have lots of, you know, brand new listeners, lots of brand new folks in the space. So let's break down DeFi, right? What is decentralized finance and what about it made you attracted to it enough to leave your nice job at Citi?
Yeah. So decentralized finance is in effect the ability to conduct various transactions, financial activities, which could include borrowing and lending, swapping assets, etc., without a central party sitting in between you and the party you're transacting with. So, you know, one good example is, you know, if you want to borrow money in the traditional world, you go to a bank, which is a central entity, which provides you funding based on various criteria. In decentralized finance, you know, in the short lifespan that it has so far, you can go to something like Aave, which is a lending and borrowing protocol, and you can borrow assets versus some of your collateral, meaning some of your other assets. So if you give it some Bitcoin, deposit some Bitcoin, you can borrow some stable coins like USDC against that Bitcoin. But nobody, there is nobody sitting in between you and the person that you borrowed funds from. So in effect, there's just a smart contract. And what that allows for, and like why that's a really cool and big idea, number one, it should reduce spreads, meaning like the cost of doing business over time, because you don't have to pay the bank. But it also allows for really unique things to be built on top of it. So, you know, hopefully in the future, when we have something like Uniswap, which is another decentralized finance application, or Trader Joe, which are swapping applications, you can, you know, swap one asset for another asset with nobody sitting in between you, and hopefully nobody kind of like front running your trades. So the decentralized finance, those are two really small examples. The implications are quite wide ranging because they really they allow for a whole new economy that's built on top of less trust into central entities that, you know all your data and try to sell you based on that data.
What do you think the success metrics are for DeFi as a space? Can it really take over the entire world, or will there be parallel economies in centralized finance and decentralized finance? How do you view like real mass adoption in DeFi?
That's a great question. So I think that for a good amount of time, it'll definitely be parallel. And until it's actually regulated, it'll be very hard for it to be, you know, widely adopted, because there are regulatory implications to, you know, swapping your assets with folks who aren't KYC'd and all this kind of stuff, especially depending on the jurisdictions that you're in. So until those things happen, the adoption question remains outstanding. However, long term, I'm incredibly bullish on decentralized finance being the way that kind of finance is conducted. Once you use it, once you're involved in it, you kind of realize that a lot of the other systems are very antiquated and don't really serve our purposes, you know, these days. And, you know, in the future, when eventually there's, let's call it a, you know, like a central bank digital currency or CBDC or some sort of form of fiat that we have now that's actually digital, decentralized finance will become incredibly more important, because there won't even be that fiat outlet that there is now. So folks will have to, you know, borrow and lend on their money that they're also buying coffee with. And the implications of that are quite unique. So I think we have a long way to go, but the implications are quite wide ranging. And I think will transform the financial infrastructure, which is, to be clear, is something that hasn't really had much innovation for decades at this point.
Yeah, and it almost feels to me like there's got to be a marriage almost of real world assets and the blockchain. And basically, there's all sorts of different projects that are out there that are, you know, bringing on and tokenizing real estate and being able to have deeds on the blockchain so you could have verifiable transfer of ownership, or, you know, loaning against real world assets and having, you know, NFT receipts and you know, passive income generated that way. But is real world assets a area of focus for Aave Labs?
Yes, it's an area of huge focus, and I've kind of put it on the roadmap for this year. You know, last year for us was about adoption, gaining traction, proving that the chain, the blockchain, in effect, does what we say it does. This year is about, you know, going into multiple different niches and verticals, if you will, to kind of build out adoption for everything. So in terms of real world assets, you know, there are many folks who are kind of working and talking about that stuff. So you have Centrifuge. I think Maple Finance is another one that is looking into that. So there's a lot of folks working on that. I know they've implemented some of that on Aave, on Ethereum, and we're in talks to kind of make that happen as well. But yes, you know, this over collateralized lending and borrowing is not like it's not what DeFi has to offer for the long term future. There's real world assets and putting all this stuff on the blockchain is what's going to happen, and digitizing, you know, all assets is what the real implications are.
One could make the argument that DeFi was born on Ethereum and it just spread like wildfire all throughout that ecosystem and to other ecosystems as well that are now replicating what was already built and improving upon it. Well, what was it about Avalanche that made you want to build there specifically as opposed to Ethereum or Cardano or Tezos or anything else?
Yeah. So a few things really. You know, when I read the Avalanche white paper, and you know, that is the reason I prefaced my story in terms of I tried to build a dApp on Ethereum in 2017 and really went down every rabbit hole. And, you know, there's some real complexity to building a dApp on Ethereum, not because of the EVM, but because of the costs. The fees, the transaction fees are quite high. You know, a simple swap transaction, depending on the time of day, could be $50 to $150, which is just not reasonable for many applications. Mm-hmm. So when I saw the Avalanche white paper and the innovative consensus mechanism that it proposed, and I want to keep this, you know, high level, but in effect, what I saw that was possible was a scalable blockchain with low fees. And Avalanche has this notion of something called subnets. Subnets are, in effect, application-specific blockchains or additional blockchains that can continue to be grown on the Avalanche network. So you can continue to see new and new and new blockchains growing. It could be for one application. It could be for one niche. It could be for one vertical. You're going to hear a lot about that in the coming months. But what's really cool about that is it allows Avalanche to scale horizontally and, you know, infinitely, frankly, because, you know, when you set up continuous new blockchains, you don't have the log jams that you do on a single threaded chain.
And now are subnets live? Is this something that's already active or are they still being developed?
Subnets are live. We recently announced something called Subnet EVM, which is essentially you can spin up your own subnet with one command line code at the moment. I think we put that out in December. We are currently working with many partners that are developing their own subnets that you should see in the next month or so. And I think that's going to be a transformation for the whole blockchain space. You know, many applications don't need to be completely composable, meaning sitting on top of each other on the same chain. And many applications kind of get ruined by being on one chain. So, for example, some of this, what's called GameFi, which are high throughput transactions, things that I call that are not mission critical, right? Which, you know, like, you know, whether or not you're feeding your NFT chickens or you're doing these types of things, right? You know, this is not mission critical. So taking those types of things off a main chain and putting it on a subnet where users can, you know, have even much lower fees than already are on the Avalanche C-chain and much higher throughput. But the other impact of this is it doesn't affect anymore what's happening on the main chain. So you take all that load off the main chain and, you know, now all the experiences get infinitely better. The other unique thing with the subnet is that, let's say you're an application or you're a game and you want to build on a subnet, the gas token of that subnet could be your token. So that's quite unique in the sense that it allows for all new tokenomics for all these applications that didn't exist prior. And it gives more utility to these tokens.
Fascinating. By now, you've probably heard all about cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. And you might have even already started investing in them, but did you know that you could invest in cryptocurrencies through your retirement account? That's right. With iTrust Capital, you can buy and sell cryptocurrencies from a crypto IRA and get all the same tax advantages as a traditional IRA. So iTrust Capital allows you to invest in over two dozen of the most popular cryptocurrencies. And unlike the stock market, you can buy and sell 24 hours a day. The iTrust Capital platform is easy to use, and it only takes a few minutes to create your account. And setting up an IRA is free, and iTrust's fees are low. It's time to start taking control of your financial future. And with iTrust Capital, you can get all the tax benefits
of a retirement account while investing in crypto. So visit itrust.capital/crypto101 to start investing today. Again, that's itrust.capital/crypto101. Taxes and conditions may apply, fees apply, and cryptocurrencies are a speculative investment with risk of loss, and iTrust Capital Incorporated does not provide legal, investment, or tax advice. Consult with a qualified legal, investment, or tax professional. Let's face it, we've all gotten burned by crypto at one point. I mean, I know I have, right? One day you're up 167% or whatever, and the next day you're deep in the red. But remember, great investors know when to reinvest their gains. And this may shock you, but many elite crypto whales are reinvesting their gains into an unexpected alternative asset, and that's blue chip art. So from 1995 to 2021, blue chip art prices outpaced the S&P 500 by 164%. And this could explain why a crypto billionaire recently invested hundreds of millions of dollars into physical art. And even if you aren't flushed with, you know, Bitcoin billions, well, you can still diversify with art like those guys. All right. And with Masterworks, the revolutionary investing app, you can actually invest in art. You can invest in a Warhol or a Banksy, for instance, all for less than a tenth of a Bitcoin. Sounds like a good deal, right? And for a limited time, they're giving Crypto 101 listeners a special offer. And to find out what that special offer is, head to masterworks.io/crypto101. Again, that's www.masterworks.io/crypto101. It's important as well to see the important Regulation A disclosures at masterworks.io/CD. And we're going to put that in the show notes as well. Now, one of the other things that I've come to discover about AVAX was that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it has the most validators, the largest validator set of any other proof of stake protocol. Is that correct?
To my knowledge, that is correct. There's almost 1,300 validators, and that's growing quite fast every week. And, you know, that's... It's a nuanced point. So there's two important things about Avalanche. One is finality. Finality is super important when you're looking at blockchains, because what that means is from the time I submit my transaction, how fast before it is completely final. You know, in these old proof of work systems, you had these things called confirmations where you had to wait a certain amount of confirmations before the transaction was actually complete. And it couldn't be something that's called a reorg. On Avalanche, in less than 1 second, your transaction is completely final, cannot be reorged, it's done. And what this allows for is really, really nice UX experience. You know, you submit transaction, it's done, you're already moving to the next. You're just like, you're clicking and going, and that feels good. So that's important, but combining the fact that we have the 1,300 validators with the sub-second finality shows the power of kind of the science behind what Avalanche has. Because a lot of these other chains, you know, they have 50 validators. So it's not super hard to kind of have good throughput and speed when you're super centralized.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I've seen in some competitors is the networks actually just going down and just being, you know, kind of backlogged for a day or for 8 hours or something. Has anything ever happened like that in AVAX? Have there been any like big network outages or maybe something similar?
Not since I've been here. And that's not to say it's because of me. I'm just saying in my experience being here, that has never once happened. We had one very brief gas spike before one of our upgrades went in, but that's, you know, just business as usual. Nothing stopped. Everybody got their transactions through. But yeah, I have watching very closely, you know, some of this other stuff that has been going on. Yeah, I mean, look, this is going to be interesting to see kind of the way this all plays out.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I want to harken back to, you know, you mentioned GameFi, and I think this is a very, very new trend. At least it's new to me, right? I've kind of been a
you know, a crypto guy, censorship resistance guy, DeFi, and then now GameFi is starting to come up, and I'm like, whoa, I am not caught up to speed there. But it's a huge, huge trend that I think Avalanche is the main leader in. Now, are there any fun games, or do you have a favorite kind of like game on Avalanche that you'd love to plug?
Okay, so my job in and of itself lends itself to being quite lonely. if I say one game is my favorite, I'll have like 30 DMs. I'll give you a few good games that I know of. So there's the Krabata game on Avalanche, which is really fun. You can buy your crab NFTs and send them out to mine. And there's a whole really cool roadmap that they're developing that I think, you know, I mean, people are quitting their jobs, frankly, to mine these crabs, which is bananas. But
wow.
Yeah. No, bananas is a different game.
Yeah. Fair enough. It's a good game. They're building a subnet, which is cool. I like the chicken NFT game. That's mm-hmm. that's pretty cool. What else? If I'm forgetting a game, don't get mad at me. No. I'll say one on another chain. This way, you know, I seem fair too. DeFi Kingdoms, they will be coming to Avalanche with their new realm, but that's on Harmony right now. That's a really cool game, in my opinion. They got some really deep-rooted ideas and thoughts. And then Ragnarok is a new one that's gonna launch. So you're gonna see like so many of these games in the next 6 months.
Ragnarok's like an old game that's like super famous, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I don't think this is the same. Yeah, I don't think it's the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could you kind of explain to us and to the audience a little bit about like the mechanics there? You're saying like, you know, people are quitting their jobs to, you know, mine these NFTs. And I think a lot of times people are like, you know, that sounds crazy. They don't get it. And like, it's the same way that people didn't understand, you know, 10 years ago, people quitting their jobs to go, you know, mine Bitcoin, right? Or, you know, people are like, that's insane. Like that doesn't make any sense. You're burning electricity to like run this computation pattern, and then you get rewarded these, you know, digital tokens that don't have any value. Like what the hell are you doing? And then of course now we see an entire industry. So I see so many similarities between like, you know, the skeptics of GameFi and like people just saying like, oh, it's, you know, just a toy. But you know, there's that famous quote, the next big thing often does just look like a toy. So what are some of the mechanics that are like drawing people in and making people money there?
Well, a lot of it's actually some deep-rooted strategy in order to be quite successful in these games. So, you know, you need to be quite strategic. A lot of it I liken it to is like owning rental properties. You know, you buy a property, you rent it out to people, and they pay you some income, and you pay off some of the expenses, and hopefully there's some profit at the end. This is kind of like that. You know, you're buying an asset, an NFT. You're sending it out to do whatever the game is incentivizing you to do in order to earn some coins. And then with those coins, you are making decisions of, you know, buying more crabs or, you know, i.e. real estate, or selling those tokens that they gave you for dollars or stable coins and just earn, you know, keeping the income. So there's a lot of dynamics in that front. But in effect, this is what it forces users to do. And I think this is just the first stage of these types of games where, you know, it's just a bootstrapping mechanism to get people to start to play. And then it'll start to get much more in depth as it relates to battles, PTP, different types of actual gaming mechanisms inside the game, like where it feels like you're playing a Web2 game. This is a pretty new space at this point.
Speaking of new spaces, we're hearing a lot about the metaverse. Is metaverse and GameFi the same thing, or is it the same thing sometimes, or two totally separate things that both just happen to be happening in virtual worlds?
Yeah, I think the metaverse and GameFi can intersect. I don't think they're exactly, I don't think every GameFi is a metaverse. So metaverse, in my opinion, is just something where, you know, you can bring some sort of digital component identity, something around in various digital places. That's kind of how I think about the metaverse. So it's like a new world, but where you have some existence and you can kind of traverse across that new world and do various things.
Fantastic. Luigi, while we still have you, you know, we have a couple questions that we like to dive into with every guest that comes on the show. And it's kind of a simple one, but of all the other companies, and we'll just say excluding any partnership that you guys are working with or anybody affiliated with Avalanche, what is one company that you think is making kind of like the largest impact on the crypto space? Feel free to take your time thinking about it. It's kind of a big question.
Oh man, that's a really good question. I would say between FTX and Coinbase, there's two right there that are, you know, centralized entities that are making a big difference. And the reason for that is they're creating a lot of awareness for the space, whether that's, you know, in a good way or a bad way, that's not for me to opine on, but they are creating a ton of awareness. You know, you saw the Super Bowl ads, the naming of stadiums, but also what they're doing is they're actually taking DeFi concepts like, you know, yield farming, staking, and doing it and allowing users to perform this in a centralized way, such that it feels like it's a little easier for them. So I think that that gives people a natural segue and easy way to kind of get their feet wet. And so that's pretty important. So they're also tackling a lot of the regulatory things, right? They're taking the bullets for the rest of the industry as it relates to kind of talking to regulators, you know, in Coinbase's case, you know,
yeah,
becoming a public company, right? So that's super important for the industry. A lot of folks in DeFi might not realize because, you know, there's very anarchist tilt to that group. But, you know, eventually, if you want to be part of the real world, you have to, you know, you have to play with the real world. And and regulation eventually comes into play there.
Can I actually ask you your opinion on, you know, as a head of DeFi, where do you see global regulation going? What's like the trend for this? Is it going to be that, you know, all wallets have to be KYC'd? Do you see that as being something, or is it going to be just more, you know, down, you know, state level regulations? Do you see anything kind of on the horizon?
It's very undecided, frankly. Mm. I think the problem here, not the problem, but the situation is you have multiple jurisdictions thinking about things and learning about things at different paces and different ways. And it's just very hard to regulate at this point because if you take a very strict stance right now, you know, you risk other counterparties and other nations not doing so, and thus, you know, all this excitement and innovation leaving, you know, your country, and, you know, also making a huge policy error. So I think it's hard for anybody to act in a very strong and big way yet, you know, until either the industry forces regulators to do it by doing something really stupid, or by, regulators sort of putting together like a joint body to kind of like perform some of this.
So if 2021 was the year of adoption, improving the technology, what do you think you could call 2022, the year of blank?
Oh man, I'm hoping 2022 is the year where tokens are given more utility. Hmm. You know, I think some of that happened in 2021. So I think 2021 was really good to proving, hey, look, there's going to be more than one blockchain and, you know, there's more than one of these that could work. I think 2022, hopefully we can show that, hey, you know, tokens are actually something that you might want to own because they actually have utility, they have real value, and you're going to want some of those in your portfolio, potentially, you know, hopefully that's where it ends up.
Aaron, yeah. Let me ask you the same question.
I think it's a great answer, and my answer is similar, but I'll rephrase it. I think it's the year of legitimacy. Hmm. It's where this stuff is proven to be a safe technology to use in a company, in a government, in a lifestyle, in your own savings and investment portfolio. There's people that never would have gotten into crypto. And, you know, I have got a story. When I first got in, my best friend laughed at me. He said, "You're doing what? You're getting involved in, huh?" And he said, "Look, man, this is never going to take off." When my mom, a little old Mexican lady who doesn't even trust the banks,
keeps
all her money in an envelope, finally agrees to do Bitcoin with her sewing circle, then I'll believe it's going to happen. And sure enough, last year, his mom called me
said,
"I want to put money into Bitcoin." And that was the aha moment that the top was in. And sure enough, I sold a lot of my holdings and bought a house. But sure enough, like that happened. And I think that's going to happen for more and more and more people this year. And in terms of tokens having more utility, I think we're starting to see that with a lot of teams revamping their tokenomics right now.
Yeah.
We're seeing farming as a service come out, where instead of being a speculative asset, each token is essentially a share of a fund, which can either, you know, be pegged at net asset value or not. And I think there's going to be a lot more gravity towards these types of tokens as new ways of analyzing these things come out, models for, you know, discounted cash flow futures or whatever it is to understand some kind of value for what this token can represent relative to a network's earnings or yield in a treasury. I think some of these things are going to start coming out and become more accepted standards where right now it doesn't exist yet. But I think, you know, crypto's 365, 24/7. 1 year in crypto is like a decade in the rest of the world. So I think before the end of the year, we're going to have solved some of these challenges.
Yeah. And I'm excited just for the fact that, like, you know, crypto has just such a density of intelligent builders, right? And just intelligent people. And so when there's problems, you know, it's like a hive mind. Like the incentives are so well aligned for people to continue to develop in crypto and to research in crypto and to build, because at the end of the day, this is where all the action's happening. There's a huge, huge outflow of, you know, people from Web2 or from traditional finance into crypto. And, you know, people love owning Bitcoin. People love owning, you know, Ethereum and a lot of these layer one tokens. And, you know, over time, I think there's just more and more and more fundamental value that continues to accrue to these networks that, again, hopefully in theory and, you know, it accrues to the token. But yeah, these communities are really strong. They're growing. So yeah, I'm excited. And, you know, Luigi, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. I know you got the Avalanche conference coming up and there's all sorts of crazy things. So we'll just ask you one final question before we let you go. And it's a pretty simple one, but, you know, Crypto 101, a lot of brand new folks getting into the industry. What's just one word of advice, one word of wisdom that you would want to, you know, leave with all the listeners today from a true veteran?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me, guys. This is really a ton of fun. And, you know, I really admire you guys kind of opening up space, you know, via education. But one thing I tell people all the time is, you know, don't be scared by the first, you know, interface that comes up. You know, get your hands dirty, start to play around with some of these applications, and you'll see how quickly you'll learn and how easy a lot of this actually is. Don't be afraid to YouTube things and then to learn how to use various applications. There are a lot of tutorials online, you know, and just do your research. You know, like if you're confused about something, click the Discord link on the application and ask a question. Go into the Telegram, ask a question. You know, I've never seen an industry that has more actual help for people to kind of ease their way in. And this stuff is 24/7. There is a community mod available to answer questions on all these applications at any time. I mean, you really are in good hands if you can, you know, if you're willing to just ask. So I would just say, get your hands dirty, ask questions, and, you know, enjoy.
Fantastic. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. We hope you guys learned something. I know I sure did. And with that being said, we'll catch you guys soon.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.